Welcome to Tales from Weber, a podcast where we talk about some of the lesser-known stories of Weber County's history. We draw from not only the written history books, but also newspapers and materials available to us at Weber State University Special Collections. I am your host and storyteller, Sarah Langston. By day, I am the head of Special Collections, and the rest of the time, I consider myself an enthusiastic historian of Weber County. We started this podcast to shed light on the interesting history of the area and not just repeat the same stories that have been told before. So sit back and relax as we stroll through the history of Weber County. On this episode, we will be discussing a 1916 homicide in Ogden. It involves the proprietress of a rooming house on 25th Street, Fanny Dawson, and what the newspapers dubbed as Murder, Inc., or the Murder Ring. So let's first talk about what was happening in Ogden in 1916. The depot at the corner of Wall Avenue and 25th Street became the center of the town's economy. By 1916, there were about 35,000 people in the city and dozens of trains coming through each day. All of the blocks to the east, north, and south of the Union Station contained businesses that in some way serviced the railroad, its workers, and the millions of travelers who passed through, including shops, bars, hotels, rooming houses, restaurants, and gambling halls that hosted hundreds of eating, drinking, swearing, and sometimes violent men and women. 25th Street was the center of Two-Bit Street, or the street that never slept. Our story begins when police find the body of Patrick Quigley early in the morning on January 19, 1916. So just who was Patrick Quigley, and how does he end up dead behind the Senate Cafe? Well, Patrick was a 30-year-old miner in town in between jobs. Witnesses say they saw him Tuesday night out drinking at the St. Louis Saloon and left with a gentleman called Patrick Flannery. Quigley's body was found in the early morning by patrolmen Woodentine and Pincock during their regular rounds. Let's look at who was involved in the murder and who was accused of doing what exactly. First up is James Whitey O'Brien. O'Brien was captured in Nevada on Thursday and accused of beating Quigley to death and leaving him behind the Senate Cafe. Several men had seen Quigley with O'Brien on Tuesday. O'Brien claimed that Frank Philbrick asked him to help move the body of Quigley. Philbrick was also arrested for the murder. The murder took place at 352 and a half 25th Street, the rooming house run by Fanny Dawson. She didn't have a rooming license and claimed not to keep a register, so she didn't know who was staying in the rooms. While under arrest, O'Brien confessed that Quigley was doped and died in the kitchen in the presence of Philbrick, R.M. Powers, Alfred Dawson, and Fanny Dawson. The body was then taken up to room 3 before it was moved outside. O'Brien confessed that they had lost their grip on the body and it tumbled down the stairs as they were moving him. Fanny Dawson was also then arrested. The next day, during the coroner's inquest, Fanny told the story of the gentleman coming back to the rooming house and enjoying drinks and dancing. Philbrick gave beers to Quigley, who after the second seemed to act funny and then passed out. He was then brought up to his room. Fanny said she thought that Philbrick had given him knockout drops. After they disposed of the body, Philbrick told O'Brien to get out of town. Newspapers claimed that Patrick Flynn was the gang's field agent who had bought the chloral hydrate and other poisons used. So, Frank Philbrick gets arrested and is tried for murder in the first degree. His penalty was death or hard labor for life at the state prison. Fanny Dawson and Richard Stevens were each held under a $1,000 bond as witnesses in the case. O'Brien is released as he would provide no further information. So just how does the story unfold in the local newspapers? It seems that it may have happened many times before. There were several reports of people being drugged and going missing or robbed. There was the poisoning of Harry Grayson and the disappearance of Ross Alexander Porter. Grayson recovered, but Porter was never seen again. Later, George Dixon said he was drugged and missed 2 days of work and was fired from his freight position at Southern Pacific. The authorities did not believe his story. He said he had met Fanny Dawson on the street and was invited up to her rooming house for beers. He woke up the next morning remembering nothing and had no money in his pockets. Another unknown miner was allegedly drugged and robbed in the Dawson house before he escaped. He was then treated for chloral hydrate poisoning. An interesting aspect of the case is how Fanny Dawson is portrayed in the paper. The headlines in the papers included, "Murder Ring Unearthed. Woman leader of gang that sells human life for the price of carousal. Desperate organization of thugs and highwaymen. Crimes plotted. Bodies carried out." One news article stated, quote, "Two children, a little boy and a smaller girl, cried themselves to sleep last night because their mother could not come in to kiss them goodnight. Accused of being the leader behind a vicious murder ring who has at least twice in the last few weeks held a human life so cheaply to dispose of it for barely enough dollars and cents." Let's look a little at the trial and the evidence that was presented. Remember that only Philbrook was charged with first-degree murder. Everyone else arrested was either let go or became witnesses for the prosecution. Witnesses included Fanny Dawson, James Whitey O'Brien, Alfred Dawson, and Richard Stevens. The state chemist, Herman Harms, and county physician, Dr. A.A. Robinson, tested Quigley's organs. There was no chloral hydrate present, so it must have been the 1/7 of 1 grain of morphine in the portion of intestines tested that killed him. However, they needed to prove beyond reasonable doubt that Philbrook administered the morphine and an injury caused by some instrument or weapon. The state chemist stated that at least 2 grains were needed to cause death. They didn't have the stomach of Patrick Quigley to test as it was accidentally cremated by a janitor. The morphine, the state chemist stated, could have been from an over-the-counter or even a prescription. The story was that the men met Quigley at a bar and were drinking and returned to the rooming house. They continued to drink and Philbrook put something into the beer given to Quigley. He was then taken to his room and left there. Once it was discovered that he had died, they discarded the body, and the men split the $9 from Quigley's possessions between them. Fanny Dawson, during trial, retracted the statement she had made earlier about knockout drops. She said she knew nothing about them being at her place. Philbrook said he moved the body so that Fanny wouldn't get into any trouble. So the case goes to the jury, and the jury deliberates and comes back not guilty. Said that there was some reasonable doubt, but people wondered how else could Quigley have died. After being found not guilty, Frank Philbrook said he was leaving Ogden for Castle Rock to work for the Union Pacific as a steam shovel engineer. He also told the press, "I've taken my last drink." So what exactly do we make of this story? Who was fueling the story, the press or the police? The press sensationalized the coverage of the murder and the trial. There were headlines like, "Murder Ring Unearthed," "Gang mistress tell story of death plotting," "Was Porter murdered by members of Ogden gang?" "Two more poisonings reported to the police." And just what themes become aware to us as a contemporary reader? Well, Dawson was a mother and a woman. It was during this time that women were seen as either the angel or the whore. Dawson lived in the city without her husband. She ran a rooming house where she was in constant contact with single men. The rooming houses were often known as fronts for brothels. She was known to drink and dance with gentlemen after her 2 young children were asleep. Even her estranged husband said he would come get the children if his wife was arrested. Fanny just had her 18-year-old son, Alfred, who was staying with her and was also said to be part of the gang. We also hear about alcohol being such a dangerous drug. During the 1916 was the time of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. This group of women were advocating for the banning of alcohol, said it was a moral issue and a health issue, that it often caused men to become violent, that nothing would have happened if the men had no access to beer. So my question is, if Fanny served only as a witness for the case, why has she become such an urban legend in Ogden? So the Murder, Inc. stories are told over and over again. People often take to the fact that she was arrested as a sign of her guilt. There is even a drink named for her at the local bar alleged. And Ogden uses her as an example of how Ogden is, quote, still untamed. So I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of Tales from Weber. I have been your host, Sarah Langston. This podcast has been generously funded by Friends of the Stewart Library. a group of community members that are passionate about libraries and the history of the surrounding communities. If you are interested in learning more about this group, please visit the Stuart Library's website at library.weber.edu. Please join us again as we continue to explore the history of Weber County.